Let's get started. Welcome. Right, if you're here, hopefully you're expecting a seminar called Grace to Get the Job Done. Is that what you're expecting?
Yes.
That's good, because that's what I'm expecting to do. My name is Darren. I am the Director of Operations at Welcome Church in Woking, which is where I've been for the last 5 years. Before that, I was the operations manager at Grace Church in Chichester. And I was there from the very start. I was actually part of the church planting team. There were six of us that started that church. My wife, Steve Petchy's wife, and another couple. So we were there from the very beginning of that one right through until the point where, as I left, they were just going to four sites. So we built that up through that stage. Prior to that, I was over at King's Church in Hastings. So I've been working for churches doing operations for about 25 years, which is quite a long stint. I've also done various operational roles both in industry. So my first role was working in the large scale industry, working for one of the biggest manufacturing companies in Sussex, where I sort of worked my way up and became the technical operations manager. And then whilst we were doing the church plant, obviously I had to work as well, because you can't employ many people when there's only six of you. And at that point, I worked in a secondary school, where I was responsible for all the operations of the school, worked under the head teacher with the deputy head who did teaching, and myself who did non-teaching. So the reason I explain that a little bit is just to let you know, probably wherever you are at, whether you are at a church of six people, where I am at a church at the moment of 1,000 people, whether you have got your own building, no building, renting buildings, whether you're in industry as a volunteer helping out in church, whether you're working in industry or in the service sector, I have probably had some experience in all those areas. So hopefully what I can share will be helpful for you. What I'm not is someone who's used to standing up here speaking. This is not my safe space. I feel very uncomfortable doing this. Part of the reason I'm not wearing my glasses is I can't see you at all, which makes me think you're not here. Makes it a lot easier for me. You're all just these blurry figures. What I'm actually going to do today, I've been asked to talk about, grace to get the job done. And what I'm going to be doing is it's not going to be a Bible study, a nice, clear, polished talk of this level that we've had already today. We've had some brilliant talks, haven't we? What I want to do is just share, sort of a bit more chatty, sharing things that I've done, things that I've found useful, things I've messed up, things I've learned as we've gone through over the years that I found helpful. And I'm hoping that as I do so, some of them will be helpful for you guys. What I'm not saying is I've got all of this sussed and that I'm really good at doing this and I get it right all the time. I've got some members of my team here in the room, people I work with are here, one of my elders and trustees is here, and they will tell me, I know what you're not allowed to do is heckle and go, if only you actually did that. The primary thing, if we want to talk about getting the job done, the biggest issue is working with people. The church is a volunteer organisation. We need people to do everything. If it just relied on us, we could do very, very little. We need people. We need to be able to get the right people, recruit people, train people, equip them, encourage them, enable them, release them, and do everything. So what I'm going to be focusing on as we look through today is how do we do that? How do we lead people? How do we get them, train them, equip them, release them? That's going to be my focus as we go through. So I just want to start by thinking about how do we make sure we've got the right people, or have we got the right people? I just want you to think for a second. How do you choose your people? Whatever you are doing, whether you are looking at employing somebody for your team, whether you're looking at recruiting team leaders for a Sunday morning, or just getting people onto your team, how do you do it? What's the criteria that you use? What do you look for? What qualities? Do you look at skills, experience, qualifications, aptitude, availability? Or we're so desperate we simply go, I don't care about any of that. If they're available, they're warm, they're able to stand up, we'll have them. Often the case on some of our teams, I know. You know, what do you look for? What do you prioritise as you're trying to find the right people? What did Jesus do when he looked for his people? In the Gospels, we see just Jesus initially gathering the disciples. I think it's interesting. I know when we read the starts of the Gospels, we see, and it's often described, the calling of the disciples. In my mind, you always think, oh, right, we're told the stories of him calling Peter or Matthew or some of the others. And you almost think, oh, right, there's the 12 that he went and we're told. If you actually read through, Jesus called lots of people, lots of disciples. And over the first few chapters, he is calling a big crowd. He is starting his church. He's gathering them in and building a group of people. Then he chooses his leaders. Out of that crowd, he chooses his disciples, his apostles rather, out of the group of disciples. And I think we see that when we get to Luke chapter 6. So Luke chapter 6, it's time to appoint the 12. At that point, you sit there and think, if this was me, what would we do? You'd start going, right, okay, we've got this big crowd. What skills have they got? Who's been working well? Who's been getting on with people? Who's the natural leaders we've got here? Who's good? And we'd be starting to assess them. That's not the process Jesus uses. What we're told, Luke 6, verse 12, he says, Jesus went out to the mountainside to pray. He spent the night praying. Then when morning comes, he called the disciples to him and chose the 12, calling them the apostles. He had a different priority. This was Jesus, and he spent all night praying before choosing the 12. Elsewhere it says, man looks on the outward appearance, God looks on the heart. I wonder, if we had been choosing the 12, would we have picked completely different people? I think Mike Reeves, in his last talk, beautifully illustrated what we might be looking at between the Pharisee and the tax collector. I think if we had looked at the crowd of the disciples and said, which ones should we choose? If you think about the 12 he chose, Simon Peter, emotionally unstable, given to fits of temper. Don't want him on my team. Andrew, no signs of leadership quality there. Don't want him. James and John, probably placing personal interests above anything else. Don't want them on my team. Thomas, questioning nature. Undermined morale, don't want him on the team. Matthew, the tax collector. No one likes him, no one wants to work with him. Definitely don't want him on the team. James and Theudas, the two zealots. Extreme radical leanings, probably a little bit dodgy in their theology. Probably, knowing zealots, a little bit of a manic depressive. Don't want them on the team. We probably wouldn't have chose those 12. But Jesus sees something different. He sees beyond just their skill and the character. Don't hear what I'm not saying. We do want people who are capable. We want skilled. We want confidence. We want people that can help us do the job. But that's not our top priority. We can actually help teach and train a lot of things. What we need to do is make sure we're getting the right heart and character that we can then train and develop and use. I think we all know this. It's probably all sitting there going, yeah, that makes sense. I think we are less good at it when it comes to picking people for our operational teams. I think if we probably know it when we're picking people to be life group leaders or on our pastoral team or on our prayer team. I think when it comes down to more operational roles, to be on our welcome teams or our kids teams or our other teams, we are probably less good at it. And we tend to look a little bit more at how good are they at doing the job. Are they available? Oh, great, he can do that. And we bring them on. Let's make sure we look at the heart. Acts 6, the choosing of the seven. It's another really interesting place to look. It helps highlight as well. Here we are in the early days of the church. As far as we can see at this point, the church is still being led by the 12 apostles. There's nobody else in place. The 12 apostles are leading it. We've had the day of Pentecost. 3,000 people have been added. The church is rolling along, growing steadily, starts to face a few problems. It's time to add to the church staff. I think it's really interesting that the first employees of the first church are not children's workers. They're not evangelists. They're not pastoral team. It's admin team. I think that's really interesting. I think I could do an entire talk this afternoon on why I think it's important that we get high quality admin in our leadership. But that's not what I'm here to do. But I think it's worth looking at. You know, we want to bring in some administrators to help shape the church. But the criteria that is given is choose men, not who have the skill to do it, or who have that skill, or that's this skill, whatever. It's choose men who are known to be full of the Spirit and wisdom. And then verse 5 of the chapter says, choose men who are full of faith and the Holy Spirit. It's the spiritual element, it's the heart that is needed. It's their relationship with Jesus, their passion for him, being filled with the Spirit, were their top priorities of the people they chose. You know, administration, serving, helping, all gifts that have a natural element to them. But that is not our top priority. They are spiritual gifts. And we need spiritually, Holy Spirit filled people to be doing these jobs. And we need to look for those for our teams. We want people who are filled with the Holy Spirit, cultivating a lifestyle of walking in the Spirit. You know, then we can start to get the right people. I take it also as a challenge for us. If you are in any, if you're in a team, are you serving your church well if you are not filled with the Spirit and cultivating your life of walking by the Spirit? Is Jesus your top priority? I just throw it out as a challenge to you and for every one of us and for me. We have a huge responsibility to make sure we continue to be full of faith, full of the Holy Spirit, full of grace, full of humility, and have an amazing relationship with Jesus. It is very easy, if you're in an operational role, to be busy. Busy during the day at work, busy in the evening, busy on Sunday morning with tasks to be done. And even when you're trying not to be, people still come and disturb you and ask you things. You know, we need to make sure we're putting our focus on Jesus and worshipping him and building our personal relationship. Jesus highlights it with Mary and Martha, and we see it with Jesus himself. One of the most challenging verses for me in the New Testament has always been Luke 5:15. It reads, "The news about Jesus spread all the more, so that crowds of people came to hear him and to be healed of their sicknesses." Revival is breaking out. People are flooding in to see Jesus. And what does Jesus do? Jesus then often withdrew to lonely places and prayed. When things got busy, when there was people coming in saying, "Teach us, we want to get saved," Jesus said, "I still need to have my relationship with God first." They're the times I find, you know, what would I do? If people were queuing up outside my building, knocking on the door saying, "We want to hear about Jesus, we want to hear," I'll be there. Okay, I'll open up, let's tell you. Actually, Jesus said, no, top priority is you and your heart. Then we deal with people, and we're far more effective in doing it. And what Jesus did, he spent time with people. He had these teams of people, he worked with teams of people most of the time, but there were occasional times when Jesus was alone. I've just said he was alone. Made sure he put a priority on being alone with his worship of God. He also, we see two other key times when Jesus was alone. We see him alone when he's being tempted in the wilderness. And we see him alone when he's going to the cross. You know, his priority through most things is working in teams and with people. But there are things that Jesus did that only he could do. Only Jesus could take those temptations. Only he could go to the cross. And actually, I think there are times when there's a few tasks that only we can do. I think our model, if we're going to be like Jesus, is one, make sure we spend time alone with God. Two, spend most of our times working with teams and developing people. But be aware there are times when there's things only you can do. There will be some tasks that you need to keep hold of, that you need to be doing. I think the difficulty is knowing where that line is. I think that's part of the reason why they were told in Acts 6 to choose people full of wisdom. Because to know what actually you need to keep hold of and how much you can give away is the difficulty. Probably most of us get it wrong and hold on to too much. But what you hold on to also, I think, changes in the situation, the time, where you are in the process. Our aim is to build people, train people, equip, give away. But there will be times we need to help. For me, the areas that I tend to want to hold closer, I think are areas that have significant whole church impact. So when I first moved to Woking, we did a lot of time in having to review, change, update all of our processes and systems. Everything had to be looked at, redone. In all of those things, I had to get a lot more involved than I would otherwise have done. Which meant I was involved in everything. I pulled everything in right across because everything needed to be looked at and changed. And it was going to affect the culture we set and how we did things going on. That did result, people to me, what are you doing? You're not delegating it out. But I knew I had to bring it in, look at what we were doing, be able to change things, set up the right processes, bring in people, build a team, then we could start to hand it out. And that was the process we went through with everything. But that aim all the way was to give it back out. Difficulty is me, COVID got in the way of halfway through that process. But that was the aim, bring it out. But there were certain things I thought, well, I've got to do this. I don't feel bad about those things we need to do. But our aim, give it out. I love it now on a Sunday morning when I'm wandering around in church and people ask me questions. And my answer is, I don't know. Got to ask Mark or Ruby or Helen. Yeah, because I don't know the answers anymore. Because we've shaped it, brought it in, trained, equipped people, giving it out. And they've now been able to build it, take it forward, expand it to places I couldn't have taken it. And that's what we want to be trying to do. Let's talk a little bit about recruiting people to our teams then. What's the best way that we can recruit people to our teams? Let me start by saying one of the ways that I've found that does not work, and it's really frustrating because it would be so lovely if it did work, is to stand up on a Sunday morning and say, who wants to volunteer to come and do this job? It does not work. Yeah, I can tell by the smiles and the tears, you've tried it. It does not work. I thought at one point, if I could get the elders on board and get the elders to stand up, owning that need, and for them to say to people, which job, who wants to volunteer, that would work. They don't listen to them. No one listens to the administrator, but they do listen to the elder. So you get the elder to stand up and go, we have got this fantastic opportunity. Who wants to come and serve on our children's groups or in our brew crews or in our car park teams or whatever? That doesn't work either. The problem with it when it did, in fact, it made things worse. Because what it meant I ended up is I had teams, all of our teams, which were difficult, struggling with people, with vacancies that needed filling. And then I had a list of people who had put their name forward that I couldn't use, that weren't any, just didn't fit. You know, These people had been convinced that there was a need and that probably they might be able to help, but they just weren't the right people. You know, the underlying message that they had heard was, here is a job. I don't care who does it. We just want this job done. You know, we have tea and coffee available at the back. We want it made. I don't care who makes it. We just want tea and coffee there, ready for our visitors. That's the message that we're giving when we stand up and simply say, who wants to volunteer and come and be on this team? And the people that then put their names forward aren't always the best ones that we want for doing it. I can guarantee probably half the people that volunteered when we've tried it were just inappropriate. Either they had character issues and I just did not want them on the team, or one of the things I've found out is half of them were sort of over 70, been Christians and part of the church for the last 50 or 60 years, already serving in four or five other teams. And you're sitting there going, where are all the people between 20 and 40? Why aren't they coming forward and volunteering when we do this? Don't they love? And you start to get frustrated and annoyed. Don't they love our church? Don't they want to be doing this? What's going on? Why aren't they doing it? Don't they care? And you start to get these feelings. My feeling is, I think people in that younger generation, I can say that being an oldie now, you know, I think they want to serve. I think they want to be involved, are keen to. But I think that type of ask, here is a job, I don't care who does it or you come and do it, just does not appeal to that generation. Does not appeal to that culture. Us oldies who grew up in a church probably full of guilt and this is what I've been trained to do, when someone asks, I say I have to do it. Okay, I'm for you. We have someone over here who's on about 8. Beryl won the award in our church last year for being on more teams than anybody else. Yeah. Now, Beryl actually is fantastic. She's like, but, you know, we thought, oh, isn't it? Okay, I'll do it. That doesn't appeal to a younger generation. You know, the culture today says, I want to serve, but I want to know it's important. I want to know that I am valued in doing it. You know, that it's something that needs them, that I can commit to and get fulfillment out of doing. You know, here's a job I don't care who it does not appeal to them. What I want is this is something that suits me. This is good for you. I will get commitment out of this. I will get fulfillment from this. This is valuable. I will be valued in doing this. That's what our younger generation want. And I think we can give it to them, but we're using methods that aren't helping when we're trying to recruit. What's so much more effective is if I can come up as a team leader and I can say, hey, this is my team. This is what we do. You know, we're a kids team. This is my team. We do this every week. This is the value of what we do. We are training children. We are helping them get to know God. It's really important. It's really rewarding. I've been watching the way that you work with kids. I think you would be great on my team. I'd love to have you working with me. Will you come and join my team? I think people will respond. It's a so much more effective way of doing it. And, it takes a bit more work because you have to go around and ask it individually. And you have to have a little bit of a relationship to do it. It takes a lot longer. But they respond. And we get far, far better commitment and team members. You know, I say, it'd be lovely if I could just stand up and say, I need 20 people and they all came and were brilliant. But it doesn't work. You know, one thing I've had, you know, how can elders help us on this? I think, again, elders, I would encourage our elders, our leaders. Again, to be on the lookout for people. And not just, hey, we have great serving teams, why don't you join one? But again, to be saying, hey, I've seen the way that you chat to people. I've seen how you've been talking to people each week. That, you know, you help make people relax when they get here. Mm-hmm. Have you thought about joining our welcome team or our car parking team? Mm-hmm. You know, let me introduce you to the leader so that they can tell you about it. It's far more effective. Yep. And it's something that I encourage every one of my teams to be doing. So it doesn't come down to the team leader. Mm-hmm. So everyone on the team can be saying, hey, why don't you join my team? I love my team. Why don't you come join me? Mm. And it's saying that it's owned by all of us. Because again, the danger is if it's just down to the leader, you can only get the people I know. Where if we encourage everyone on our teams, go and find people. Go and find the people you know. And help them come onto your team. Which as well, you get friends on the team. Yeah. It takes more time, more effort. It is so worth it. It means you end up with team members who are committed and excited about serving. People whose attitude on a Sunday isn't, I have to go to church today because I'm on the kids' team. But who wake up on a Sunday morning who go, I'm excited about going today. Because it's my opportunity to be on the kids' team where I can really help these children get to know Jesus. And I want to be there. It makes a massive difference. There's a story told of two bricklayers. Someone approaches the first bricklayer and says, what are you doing? Tell me about your job. And the bricklayer says, well, what I do is I take a brick from that pile there, I get a bit of cement and I put it on the brick and I put it on top of this one and we follow this line and I build a wall. Okay. So then I come over and talk to the second bricklayer. I go, what, tell me what you're doing. I'm building the most amazing cathedral. I take my elements and I put it together, my skills and my gifting. And I am building a cathedral that is going to be one of the most beautiful, amazing buildings. People are going to talk about this all around the world when it's finished. People will flock here to see it and it will change lives. Which one of those bricklayers do you want to have on your team? You know, what sort of bricklayer are you? When you're in your team, what's your attitude? How are you communicating what you do? Because I tell you, how you communicate and the attitude you have will help build the attitude in the team. So make sure you're passing that on as well. As we build people's expectations, Mary Quinn, we need to make sure that when they start serving, we meet those expectations. There's no point having this fantastic recruiting system and then we bring them into a team and don't meet that at all. One of the dangers we have in teams, and I think tools like Church Suite can really help us in helping to organise our teams, but used wrongly can really mess us up. One of the things I've tried and seen churches do is you say, right, I have recruited 20 people to my children's team. What I do is put you all on Church Suite. Maybe I'll allocate the team leader for the week. And then I say to everybody, what I want you to do is go onto Church Suite, mark your unavailability, put yourself on for the weeks that you can serve. And you hope that people put in their names and you've got enough people for each week. You know, we think when we've done that, that we are being really good to them because we're giving them the freedom, we're honouring them to choose for the times that are useful for them. I think it's the equivalent of saying to them, great, we've got you on our team. Now you're on the team, I don't care who's there. I just want this job done. So just come on, put your name down. It doesn't work well. I think there's a massive advantage in taking people and building them into teams. And actually putting them together and saying, this is your team. This is who you are working with. Let me introduce you. Let you know who your team is and put you on a fixed rota. Work with these people. Don't keep swapping and changing your teams around. Get to know the people you're working with. Work together. You know, what it does, I think by defining teams, working in set rotas, we're helping them to build relationship. We're helping them to commitment and get reward out of their serving role. What it does, it says, I know my teammates well. I can get to know them well. It means that communication is so much better. So as well as all that I do in operations, one of the things I do on a Sunday is lead a children's team. So every third Sunday, I'm part of a children's team working with years 1 to 4, which is great fun. We have a WhatsApp group just for my team. And on the Sunday when we are on, from about the Monday or the Tuesday beforehand, we will start chatting. Right, what are we doing this week? How's this going to work? Who's going to be doing what? And we will start talking about it as a team before we get there on Sunday. Because that's a fixed group for that team. It means I'm a lot more relaxed in serving because I'm serving with people I know. I'm not turning up going, who am I with this week? What are we doing? You know, we know each other. We turn up and work well. It means I know the strengths and weaknesses of my team members. You know, I know who likes doing what. So on a welcome team, I might know who likes being on the front door, who likes showing people to their seat. You know, you find what people like, and that means you can help them do the job they like better. They know what I like. I know the weaknesses, and I know where to help people. I know if I have questions on my team, I can talk to, and who I can get help from. You know, for groups like kids and youth, it also really helps make it easier for me when we're doing silly things. So when I'm in my kids group on a Sunday and it comes to doing the silly dancing or acting out dramas or whatever it is we are doing and I am making a fool of myself in front of 40, 50 children and my team, I don't feel that bad because I know next week it will be somebody else at the front doing it. And last week it was one of them. And we get to know each other. You know, this is when I am vulnerable. You know, look at me. You know, when I'm doing Just Dance at the front of the hall, you know, I'm in a vulnerable place. This body is not built for that. You know, but the fact that I'm with the team that I know means it's a lot easier for me, which means I'm more comfortable doing it and I can serve the kids a lot better. Yeah? So what else it does, it means if I can't make a week, I know who I'm letting down. I know I'm letting my team down. And I'm far, far more likely to say, let me get somebody who can replace me and make a swap with somebody. You know, working in fixed teams has huge advantages. In my church, we ask people to work one in every 3 weeks. And all of our teams work one in three. I'd love to do one a month because it's nice and neat. But I've got to say, having tried it in churches, I say from 6 to 1,000, I can never get enough volunteers to do 1 in 4. I've tried, I've found all sorts of things, 1 in 3, and we can just about cover. There's just something about the number of people you have, the number of jobs, the number of people. 1 in 3 works, and I would recommend that as a pattern. Just lots of experience, that tends to work. We also, across our teams, try and sync all of our teams so that team one for welcome team is on when team one for kids, when team one for brew crew, when team one for car park, and so across all of our teams. Although our teams don't have a lot of interaction, it does help. It does mean that when I'm on kids, if I need to know, right, I need to get a welcome team person. You know, I've got an issue, I need to get a parent. I know it's Robbie's leading the welcome team. Robbie's team knows that when they need a children's worker, who to come to. It's not, okay, oh, who's on this week? Who's, you know, we know who's on across the teams. It just helps us as we work together. You know, if I have issues, who am I looking for? Okay, I look at talk a little bit about training and feedback. Tempted to say nasty words, things to avoid, isn't it? Training and feedback of team members in church. We're not very good at that. Yeah. My observation, we really are not good at, first of all, training our people, and secondly, giving feedback to them. You know, we recruit people to our teams, and a lot of the time, our training consists of saying, let me put you on church week, here's your t-shirt, turn up next Sunday. And that's about the level of training we give. Maybe if it's children's work, we might say you have to go on this safeguarding course, but that is about it. You know, in no other circumstances do we ask people to do something that is new and not show them what to do or how to do it. And more importantly, they're not expecting to do something new and not be shown how to do it. Yet we still have this sort of fear of I mustn't show them. You know, we need to get into a habit of training our people when they come on to join our teams. It has huge advantages. When I moved house last, about 4 or 5 years ago, for the first time in my life, I had a garden with flower beds. Up till then, we'd always had gardens which just had grass or concrete and children's play areas. But last time we moved, our children have long left and we got a house with flower beds. And I walked down the garden, I thought, I've got no idea what to do with them. I don't know how to look after them. I have a vague idea. I know you have to dig out the weeds and water the flowers, but I don't really know which is which. And I'm not really sure what to do with them. I think if I had just been left to my own and tried to do it myself, I probably would have got quite disappointed when all the things started to die or the wrong things grew, and would quite quickly have got a bit disillusioned with what I was doing. I probably ended up digging it out and putting grass there. You know, it wouldn't have lasted. What I was able to do was to get a couple of really experienced gardeners come round to my house, and they walked around the garden with me, and they showed me everything. We started at the rose bush, and they showed me what was good, what was bad, how to cut them back, when to do it. Then we went on to the next thing, and they showed me what that was and how to look after it. And we spent ages, we went right around the garden with every little thing, and then we got down to the weeds, and I said, well, show me what's weeds and what's not. And I said, well, how do I get out of the weeds? So I just go and I grab it and pull it out, and they're like, no, don't do it like that. Do it like this. Make sure you get in, get the weed out, get the root out. Otherwise, it will just come back. And I learned from them, and they showed me what to do. I then spent time doing it. And they've come back and they visited, and they've asked me how I've got on, and they spent some more time with me. Here I am now. I love gardening. My garden now, 5 years later, is looking lovely. Not about this time of year, but during this time, I've got all sorts of flowers. I've got lots of extra things we've put in, you know, and it looks lovely. And I now, during the summer, look forward to my day off when I can go home and do some work in the garden. Last year, there's an area at the back that I then sort of dug out and extended the flower beds. Why? Because I got good training. And it's made me an enthusiastic gardener. Without it, I said, I would have quickly become disillusioned and got rid of it. You know, good training, good equipping made all the difference for me to have a long-term investment. Let's plan how we train our members, our team members. Sometimes it is putting them on training courses. Most of the time, it's training on the job. It's working with people, being shown how to do things, being encouraged, being corrected, being helped. There's a 4-step training model that you may have seen that I think is just really, really helpful to keep in mind. 4 steps for training someone. First of all, watch me while I do it. Start there. This is the job, come watch me while I do it. Secondly, I'll do it while you help me. Third step, you do it and I'll help you. 4th step, you're doing it by yourself, but I'm here if you need me. keep those four steps in mind with people as we bring them into our teams. Watch while I do it. I'll show you what to do. Do it and I'll help you. Sorry, I'll do it, you help me. Do it and then I'll help you help me. And then you do it yourself. Those four steps are a brilliant way to help people that join our teams. We can apply that in almost every situation. It's not hard. It just takes a little bit of time. I'll give you an example. Someone joins your Sunday welcome team. One option is to say, "Hi, great to have you on our welcome team. Here's your t-shirt. This, what you've got to do is stand at this door, welcome people, give them out this flyer as they come in. Great, you do it." And you're there doing it. In most cases, you're going to survive. You're going to manage. But actually, you know, it's not the best we can do. I'm not serving you best. You're probably not feeling that confident. And you will do it your way. You may not get the best. It's hit and miss how good you will be. You know, there's another way of doing it. It could be, "Hey, brilliant to have you on our welcome team. Let me just explain what we want to do. Is we want to make people feel really, really welcome. When they arrive, we want them to know that we are pleased that they're here and we really, you know, want them to be part of it, want them to feel welcomed." Mm-hmm. We've also got an event coming up that I think they will love. It will be really good for them. We've got the information on this flyer. It will be good for them to get this. I don't want them to miss out on it, so we want them to take this flyer. Mm. Suddenly, you're changing the stance already. And then you say, "Right, I'm going to stand here with me and watch how I do it." Mm. "Hi, great to see you. Come on in. Nice to meet you. Have a flyer." Mm. And you say, and then after a little while, you say, "Hey, look, there's a crowd coming in. As these people come in, I'll talk to these few. You have a go at talking to those ones. Mm. And we'll do it together." Mm-hmm. And as they do, they're coming in and you're doing it together. They've come through. "How'd you get on? That was great. Brilliant. Tell you what, next crowd's coming in, let's swap places. You stand there, I'll stand behind you. If you get stuck, I'll jump in. You go for it." They come through, "How'd that go? Was that good? Brilliant." You know, you know, after a little while, "Are you great with it? Right, I'm going to go over and do something like this. If you need me, give me a shout." It's not hard. It's not rocket science. But what a difference we have set. That person, that new person in your team, suddenly feels empowered. They feel equipped. They feel confident in what they're doing. They've also started to build relationship with you. If they get stuck, who are they going to do? They're going to come and ask you. Yeah? They're also doing it to a higher standard. You've set the standard that you want. And also, it's given you a great input to be able to come back easily and be able to input into what it is they're doing. Yeah? It doesn't take a lot of work, but we can apply those four steps to almost everything that we are doing. Giving feedback. Feedback, I think you need to think of it, is an ongoing part of training. What we are doing is training people to get the best for them and from them. And part of that is giving feedback. Sometimes feedback is really simple. It is simply saying, "Well done. Good job today. Thank you for being part of my team. That was great." That's feedback. You know, how does it make you feel when you finish your team and someone says, "Thank you," rather than "Nothing, right, serves finished, right, see you next time"? A little bit of feedback. "Thank you, well done. That was great today. Really appreciate you being here." Little bit of feedback helps. Sometimes it's good to pick up on more specific items. "I need a volunteer." Having said, the best way to think is never just to say, "I want a volunteer." That's what I'm going to do. I don't care who does this. I just need a volunteer. Please, come on up. So let's role play giving something. You're new on my team. Let's just pick a... You haven't got a lot to do in this, I'll tell you. That's it. We're going to role play a couple of situations. Thank you. You're new on my team.
Right.
You've been on my team. You're on our welcome team. Mm-hmm. as we've done the morning, you've welcomed people, we've reached into that. I just want to come up and say, give you some feedback. Mm-hmm. I just want to say, Rachel, I just want to thank you for what you've done today. I think you've done a brilliant job. Really appreciate what you've done. I particularly noticed that we had that single mum that came for the first time, mm-hmm. who had her three children with her. I tell you, I looked at those and I thought, they're going everywhere, aren't they? Mm-hmm. They're manic, those kids today. You know, first time in the church, they looked scared, they were going to run. I loved the way that when they came in, you just sort of bent down to them, mm-hmm. gathered them up, and you spoke to the kids. And you asked them their names, I saw you ask them their ages, and I saw you call over a children's worker to tell them about the kids' work. That was so good. You know.
I feel great.
Yeah. You know, that mum was relaxed. She's going to come back. Well done. Yeah. Yeah. How does it make you feel?
I tell you, I could even stick it quiet. Yeah, I feel great.
Yeah.
I'm set. Why are some of them now?
Yeah. What are you going to do next time a kid's coming?
Well, I'm going to do the same next time.
Exactly. You know, I've trained by giving feedback. Mm-hmm. Specific feedback. One, you go home going, I love this team. Mm. I'm looking. You're looking out for the next kids. Mm. You know, it works. Sometimes you have to give feedback on things that haven't gone so well. Mm. Let's practice that one, you know. I'll tell you what doesn't work. Hey, Rachel, I was noticing today you didn't do a good job. That doesn't work. That's not the best way of doing it. One of the ways I find works really well is to actually give feedback in terms of starting with some questions. Because I'm not here to tell Rachel off. I don't want her to feel bad. What I want to do, if I think about feedback, is training. I want her to be able to learn, realise what wasn't so well, and work out how to do it better. That's the process I want to go through. So I say, let's be on kids' teams today. Okay. Hey, Rachel, thanks for what you've done today. You know, it was great being in kids, wasn't it? How do you find it went?
Oh, well, there was so-and-so who was a bit of a pickle this morning, weren't they? Wasn't great.
They were. It was a slightly hectic morning at times, wasn't it?
Yes. Yeah.
And obviously, today, your part of what you were doing today was leading the game. How did that go?
Oh, yes. When the ball went through the window, you mean?
That one then, yeah. Yeah, that was part of what the morning, yeah.
Yeah, and then I lost my temper, you mean?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, and I told them to stop being a silly idiot.
That's the time.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. How do you feel about
it? Well, I did feel slightly bad once I said that. And I don't know if I'll do that again.
No. What do you think you could have done?
I think I might have needed one of my team members just to come in that moment and take a bit of the stress away so I could just have a bit of a...
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing I noticed, which probably didn't help, was... as you explained the game, a lot of the kids started to disengage and sort of weren't wanting to play and started messing around. I think it was part of the way that you were explaining it didn't quite help them.
Okay.
The smoking didn't help.
Yeah. What I'd love to be able to do is next time we're on as mm-hmm. our team, 3 weeks' time, mm-hmm. I'd love you to be able to do the game again mm-hmm. and see how we can change this and help.
Okay.
Would you like, when we do it, for me to do it with you?
Great idea. Can we chat about it beforehand as
Let's
well?
Let's chat about it beforehand. Yeah, tell you what, that. When we do it, would you like for you to lead it with me helping you mm. or do you want me to lead and you help me?
Can I watch another one, please?
Yeah? Come and do it. That's no problem. Let's do that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Great. Thanks for what you've done. Let's give Rachel a clap. How did that feel, Rachel?
Well, I hate role play.
Yeah.
But that was great.
Did you leave? Well, do you think you would have left thinking, I have messed up?
No, because actually there was a solution.
Yeah.
So we had a solution.
Yeah.
That next time we'll do it together and you could just step in and help if I was floundering, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. Think of watch what that question I asked at the end, mm-hmm. reason I asked it, I've got those four steps in my mind.
Yeah.
And I'm asking, where is Rachel? Where does she feel comfortable? Because at the moment, she's on step four. She was running it. Mm-hmm. Yeah? And it hasn't worked. So does she want to go back to step three and run it with my support? Does she want to go back to step two, where I run it and she helps me? What she actually told me is I want to go all the way back to step one. Yeah? Without her having to go through that model, we're using it, and I can actually find out how can I best serve Rachel. Yeah? That's why that four-step model is really helpful. Remember, we're doing it because we want to serve people. Yeah? I want Rachel to be the best server that she can be. I want us to serve our kids or our people the best we can. That's why we give feedback. It's why we train. When we do ask the question, just a slight aside, how much time we got? When we ask the question, how things go, or what didn't go well, let's always make sure we also ask the question, how can we improve that? What can we do? The danger is, if you just ask the question, what didn't go well, without getting detail of how can we put it right, you end up with opinions, especially if you're reviewing an event. So you might say to someone, you know, how did it go on Sunday? And they're, oh, it was rubbish. Let me give you an example. Let me give you a quick story, an example. Last August at Commission Festival, Sunday morning over breakfast, I asked, this guy came in, sat down, the guy sat opposite me. I thought Saturday night had been brilliant. We'd had the offering, the talk, brilliant worship time. And I was like, oh, this is going really well. And I said to him, how are you finding Commission Festival so far? Are you enjoying it? And he looked at me and went, no. West Point was so much better. West Point was what we used to do for those that weren't with us. Immediately, I went, having listened to Mike Reeves, I'm now thinking, you know, I was being a hypocrite and putting my trust in the wrong place. But, you know, but I was like, oh, no. I could have left it there and gone through the rest of the day going, oh, we failed. What a disaster. What have we done? People are not enjoying this event. But I didn't. I actually said, okay, thank you for that. What could we do to make it better for you? His answer was not one I was expecting. He said, West Point was so much better because it had a post box in the arena. I had to walk all the way down to the village yesterday to post a postcard to my friend. Oh, I said, okay, apart from that, are you enjoying it? Oh, yeah, apart from that, it's brilliant. Suddenly, I had gone from feedback that left me flat to actually some useful information. Because I now know that next year we're going to mark the postbox in the map. Because there is one on the site. You know, it's another example. Early January, someone comes up to you in church and says, I've spoken with several people. We didn't like the cable service. I don't know if you've ever spotted, when people come with it, it's always several people that I've spoken to, and they never give you the name. You know, I spoke with several people, we didn't like the cable service. Again, if you stop there, what have you got? You know, again, if you start, what is it? Why was that? What is it we could have done to make it better? Ah, well, several issues. The big one, I brought my friends, and you know, we want them to come to cable service and then come to church. But we sung with a brass band who sung all the songs, quite slow, very traditional. And that is just not like it's normally like on a Sunday. And I just found it completely impossible to take my friends from that to say, will you come on a Sunday? And for that reason, I don't know if I'm going to be wanting to invite people next Christmas. Yeah, that was real feedback that we got Christmas before last. We changed our cable service, and last Christmas we had our band playing. It was useful feedback, which before that had been just, I don't like it. So always ask, when you get, you know, how can I change this? How can I make this better? What can we do? That's the hour up. Yeah. I've talked for too long. I hope that's been helpful for you.
Yes, thank you.
We've got anyone want to ask any questions or anything? I'll put these on. Oh, you are here. Second.
I've often found, I don't know if people found it, that you need to say goodbye to people as well.
Yep.
Very important, I've found, because sometimes people leave quickly.
Yep.
If you're there 5 minutes before the end of the service, I've often had chats with people, you know, once again,
yep. Questions, and if you have another point. Yeah. Massive point. Hello. Goodbye. Thank you. Yeah. You know, thank you for what you do. Thank you for giving. Thank you for serving. Thank you for what you do. They're three. Goodbye. Love you week. Mm-hmm. It's an important part of just welcoming people, our welcome teams. Yeah.
And when you're recruiting for children's workers and you've chosen who you want to have, do you go? Do they go through like an interview process where you get references? Because I know some churches.
As part of our SOPA recruiting, as part for children's workers, obviously they need to do a DBS. For that, under safer recruiting, we want references. Now, the process that we use in our church is if they have been part of the church for more than 2 years, then we take an internal reference. So it would be pastor team or an elder.
It's just one reference.
Yeah. If it is somebody who is new to us in less than 2 years, we will ask for an external reference and we will contact. We've been taking that from one to two at the moment, aren't we? Yeah. We're just redoing our safeguarding policy. It's been one reference. No, I've never had anybody worried about giving a reference. The bigger problem is getting the reference to give us a reference. Yeah. You have to chase them a couple of times. But yeah. Anyone else?
So much has been said, and it's so good. I don't know about everybody here, but I guess a lot of churches do the announcement for volunteers, like you said. We do that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I love what you said about relationships and teams reaching out to friends, and you can sort of get friends to come and serve with you. It's like each one can reach one to come and serve, but it takes a lot of time, and that whole concept of how in Acts they chose the administrative team with people that were spirit-filled and full of faith. Surely out of the people, if you make an announcement and people volunteer, you can discern that first and then give them options to choose where they want to serve.
You can do an extent, and we still do part of what we do with our new people. So we have a process where new people come in. We invite them to a new person's lunch. And we do lunch for new people. And part of what we do is there's ways you can get involved in the church. One of them is serving. If you're interested in serving, let us know. We do what we call a BBB course, Belong, Believe, Become course, which is our culture setting course. And we ask for all of our servers to have done that as part of their training before they're on teams. So you get to know the culture of the church. You know, because part of our training isn't just how to do the job, it's how to do it the Welcome Church way. What is the culture that we want to be setting? Again, at that, we'd be saying, "Here's what we want to serve. Here's a few options." And at that point, so there is a point where we do that, but I think the general standing up at the front of the church on a Sunday morning, just giving out the "Who wants to serve?" Well, most of the time, it's the same people hearing it again. Doesn't help. For new people, it's part of our communication of this is what it is to be part of this church. We want you to know. I want, in the same way, new people. On those meetings, we'd be telling them, part of this church is coming along, it's being involved, it's giving. If you're not baptised, we'd want you to be baptised. This is who we are. It's setting that. And at that point, we're telling them about us. Come and belong, come and be part, come and serve, come and give, come and join a life group. And we're setting that who we are. But it's to do it up on a Sunday morning for every serving, it just doesn't work. Yep.
Someone in the worship team is literally just showing up on the days they were on the rota for worship, not engaging in the rest of the church life. And obviously the heart of worship is important. It's not just
yep.
the musician.
Yeah. How do you take someone off a team?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That is a difficult conversation. I hesitate to answer it because there's probably as many ways of doing it as there are people. It does. I think the important thing is not just to ignore it. I think the art is to have the conversation. And I might start with, how are you getting on with this? Are you enjoying it? How are you finding it? If it is someone who you say is in the worship team but not involved in anything else, my first thing will be, why aren't you involved in all of this? Yeah, I noticed that you've not been coming along to life group, to Sunday, others. You know, when you're not on the band, you're not here on a Sunday. Why is that? Mm-hmm. You know, because actually, what do I want? My first thing I want is I want them. I don't just want to kick them out. I want them to change. So my first thing is, what is the reason? What am I asking? You know, what's the thing that's stopping them? Oh yeah, well, the reason, I had this on my children's team. I had someone who I noticed was only ever in church on the Sunday she was serving. So I had that conversation. And I sort of said, look, I've noticed, you know, on the other Sundays, the other two Sundays, you're not here. Can you tell me why? I said, yeah, I do night shifts. And on the Sunday, I so want to be part of this team that I come straight here, I serve, and then go home to sleep. And on the other Sundays, I catch up on nine. And I actually thought, I want you to carry on. You know, what was I looking at there? So I think I'd start with that conversation. What is the reason behind it? It may be in certain teams you need to get the ministry leader or even an elder involved, depending on what it is and where you're at. But I'd say there's 100 ways of doing it, but my big answer would be, do it. Have the conversation. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Hey. I absolutely love the giving feedback, positive.
Yep.
Something to change. I'm not sure if there's time at the end. So I'm talking kids ministry.
Mm-hmm.
We hire a school and we have to be out quite quickly.
Yep.
So it's a lot of packing up boxes and like just reflecting on it. It feels like quite a chaotic way to end a session. So all the kids are being picked up and then it's like, right, quick, everything back in boxes, boxes on the trailer. Mm-hmm. And then also people have been there since 9:30. You don't want to say, can you just wait so we can just have a, you know, group thanking time. But I just feel like it's getting lost. It would be good to have.
Be good to have.
Time.
Yes. Time is always pressure.
Yeah.
But even when you've got your own building, it's still pressure.
Yeah.
Try and building a short. It doesn't need to be long. Just a couple of minutes of, hi, guys. Sometimes it's like, just want to check, how did it go today, guys? Mm. Any issues that we need to be aware of?
Probably before packing up, I imagine.
We do it after.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, or sometimes it's during, we just grab.
Like the team sort of just
I guess with ours, again, it's find the time that suits you. So with my team, what we're tending to do is we have enough workers that as children are being collected, some of our team are overseeing that, whilst others are starting the tidy up and putting away.
Yeah.
So once all the kids are gone, which is normally the slowest bit for us, is getting, you know, 50 or 60 kids or so, the time they've all gone, most of our stuff is away. So then we often just grab together for a minute or two. Hi guys, just want to check, how did it all go today? Mm. Any issues, any problems, anything with any of your kids we need to be aware of?
Mm. That's cool, yeah.
You know, great, that's brilliant, thanks. I work quite often, we'll follow it up with in the WhatsApp chat. You know, I mentioned the WhatsApp chat. You know, even the game, I might well pick up, you know, hey Charlie, that new game you did today was really great. Love the way you did that.
Yeah.
In front of the whole group in the WhatsApp.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't need to be, my feedback to Charlie, especially if it's like positive like that, in front of the whole group. So that's where my WhatsApp group helps. Yeah. Yeah, sometimes I do that one-to-one and I might move to chat with somebody afterwards. If there's something that has gone drastically wrong, it might well be picked up with the whole team later in the week or, yep, so brilliant for telling me that information. What I need to do is outweigh that and think about that and we will come back to you as we look at what we do.
So I suppose it's just setting a culture.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, with ours, we had part of the feedback we were starting to get was our dismissal was getting quite crazy. And I say yes, because we have our juniors come as well. So actually, we're probably in the region of 70 children in the room at that point. Yeah. And parents are coming in to get them. And it was getting a bit crazy. And over a few weeks, we were getting that same feedback. This time's getting a bit difficult. Some of the kids are finding it hard, especially some of the SEN kids are struggling. Yeah. That fee came back, and I said, great, right, I'll go meet with the team leaders. We will discuss. We'll look at a new process. Yeah. And we now have a system where we hold the parents back at the door and let sort of 10 parents in at a time and keep it, and then filter the parents through. Which is quite a weird thing to be doing. You've just spent all the time with the kids, and then you go out and it's like, okay, parents, stop. Yeah. But that's what that came out of that. Yeah. Yep. Next. No, any more? Last chance. Yeah.
I love what you've been sharing, and you just touched on the word of a sort of culture, and you spoke about welcome churches right in the beginning with belong, believe, and become.
Yep.
That if the culture in the church, whether you become, belong, believe, and become, is a culture of you're here to serve, and there is an expectation of whether you are just attending church, because you're still bringing your spiritual gift, even if you're just attending, or you're in children's ministry, you're welcome. Being there is an expectation. Like the lady you explained that worked night duty, I understand that. But we have a high expectation of folk, and this is the culture and expectation, whether it's whatever ministry. You've shared everything. And
The expectation of people being there every week is probably no longer an expectation. My thing is, I grew up in a church where you were there. If you're a Christian, you were there every week. That's what you did. Sunday morning, you were at church. Twice a week. Morning and evening, and a life group in the middle of the week. That's what you did, and you served. That is no longer the British culture. I would say, and it's noticeable across our church. You can do it by age. I can do it by nationality as well. South Africans are there every week. It's part of that.
We accept that it's once a month.
We fought against, you should be here every week. But I think we're losing battle. We're not going to change the culture of the whole world. A lot of people, I reckon we have something like a third of our people come every third week. Our numbers tell us we're about 1,000 people every Sunday. I reckon over a month we see something like 1,400. Because people don't come every week. And we plan for that now. So we make sure when we're doing information, we don't just tell people once. When we're getting stuff printed and we're giving out leaflets, we don't just give it out in 1 week. And when we're planning our life groups, we're bigger than we are on a Sunday. So it's part of how as much as I would love to be able to say, everybody comes every week, I'd love to be able to say, I only need to stand up and say who will serve and they'll all serve. It doesn't work. It's a battle that it's just we're not going to win. So let's actually use it to our advantage and adjust what we do to suit them. Right, I think we've gone over the time. We will finish there.